Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to this Peak Prosperity podcast. I'm your host, Chris Martinson. And, you know, here at Peak Prosperity, we talk a lot about the need for new models and ways of doing business that comport well within the growing economic, energetic, and environmental constraints that are bearing down on us. Today, I'm pleased to welcome back Craig Wischner. Craig is the managing partner of Farmland LP, a fund that serves as a great model for sustainable business. And that's not just our view. Farmland LP was just recently named one of the world's 50 most innovative companies by the magazine Fast Company. And in 2013, it was selected for Impact Assets 50 as one of the 50 funds who lead their field in creating positive social and environmental impact while generating financial returns. The way the fund works is investors put up cash, which allows Craig and his team to acquire conventional farmland and convert it to organic, sustainable farmland for the purpose of long-term cash flow and capital appreciation. We've since watched with excitement the success he and his partner Jason Bradford have had in making it a real and thriving enterprise. In fact, that success cut off the opportunity for new investors as it filled up and got closed off. Well, Craig is here today to tell us the good news. There's a new fund opening up, and it's got a more accessible structure for most investors. Hey, Craig, thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, glad to be here.
So congrats on the launch of the new fund. This is really just fantastic news. For those listeners not familiar with Farmland and its mission, can you just provide us a quick recap?
Sure, absolutely. So Farmland LP owns $50 million worth of farmland. We buy conventional farmland and convert it to organic, sustainable farmland as an investment fund. And we're just opening up our next fund, a $250 million REIT, so that people can invest in well-managed, professionally managed farmland using sustainable agriculture best practices that generates higher revenue and has lower input costs. And really, just it being a real asset investment provides a nice, stable source of capital appreciation and cash flow for the long haul.
Absolutely, an investment you can feel good about. Now, to round out something you just said, that first farmland fund was a limited partnership. That's the LP in the name. But your new fund is a real estate investment trust, or REIT, which you pronounced as a REIT. That's how it's pronounced. Why did you structure the new fund as a REIT?
Well, REITs were a legal structure that were set up in the 60s that were designed as a way of allowing investors to hold portfolios of real assets, cash flowing assets, in a way that was similar to the way people invest in stocks. And up until then, if you wanted to own an apartment building or office buildings or farmland, you basically had to buy the building yourself or participate in limited partnerships or things like that. And there were some tax disadvantages for structuring it like that. So in the 60s, the government created this real estate investment trust structure that allowed investors to basically pool their capital, buy large, diverse portfolios of cash flowing assets, and get some really wonderful tax advantages as long as these REITs distribute 90% of their cash flow that they generate. Those distributions are done tax free. They're basically not taxed at the corporate level, and that double taxation problem that you have when you do dividends. And so it just is a more convenient, good way of holding these assets. It makes it easy for people to hold these assets in retirement accounts or foundations and endowments. International and domestic investors basically prefer this form of holding these assets. The problem is that it's, in order to comply with all the regulations, it really requires a larger size fund. So our first fund was $50 million. This next one is $250 million. And that's really a good size to basically take advantage of the structural advantages of the REIT without having, you know, where the costs basically become de minimis at that point.
Now, this REIT, as it's being structured, is this going to be publicly traded right away, or how are you planning this to work?
Well, it's a private REIT at this point. the plan basically is to raise the capital, buy the farmland, and increase the cash flow. Basically, we're buying farmland at around 3.5% cash flow, increasing it to 6 to 8% cash flow by using our management practices, which I'm glad to talk about. And then once we get it up, once we stabilize those cash flows, then the plan is to take it public as a REIT, so that basically anybody would be able to invest in sustainably managed farmland and help convert more farmland to sustainably managed farmland, basically just by buying a stock at their Schwab brokerage or something else.
Any competition on that front so far?
Well, there's a couple small funds that went public, that basically went public at the same size as our first fund, the $50 million farmland LP fund. And we just think that that's too small to deal with the costs associated with being a publicly traded company. Mm-hmm. $250, $300 million is really the minimum size that you need in order to be public, and you get actually better economies of scale by being larger.
When you launched your first fund, you had yet to purchase any farmland at all. So investors were pretty much going on faith in the vision that your team had. But now you've had nearly 5 years of history deploying your model on nearly 7,000 acres, both in Oregon, California. Tell us about the performance of those properties to date. Have things gone as planned?
Yeah. So 5.5 years ago, Jason Bradford and I, my business partner, took a road trip up to Oregon to look at buying farmland for ourselves. And it was an investment, and definitely were fans as well of the energy economy and environment perspective that you talk so well about. And so we took a week-long road trip, looked at all kinds of farmland, and really got clear that, one, farmland was a great asset class to invest in, a nice appreciating asset with stable cash flows, and that we could add value to that farmland by basically bringing livestock back onto cropland and convert that land from commodity crops to organic crops, things that we can get price premiums on. But we also saw that doing it at the scale that we were thinking about it just wasn't going to work. We needed at least $10 million worth of farmland in order to be semi-profitable with us driving the tractors. And if we wanted to get the cost structure down to something that was more institutionally friendly, then we needed at least $50, maybe even $100 million worth of farmland. And so it was really on the road trip, driving back from that week-long road trip, that Jason and I crafted Farmland LP. And we've been working on basically that exact plan ever since. And it's actually turned out very, very well. We actually look at the financial curves, and they look very similar basically to what we projected as well. So we now own $50 million worth of farmland, about 7,000 acres worth of cropland. We have 783 acres already certified organic. We have switched land from growing corn and other commodity crops to producing a wide variety of premium sheep, cattle, pastured poultry for egg production, organic vegetables, other organic seed crops in a nice sustainable agriculture rotation. And the economics have worked out well, and the financial performance is doing well. And we're also very happy that, we have a view of buying real estate, that these are very long-term assets. And so we basically saw the potential issues for water and bought very good water rights with our property. And there's a number of different ways that farmland is, we don't think, valued very well. Two pieces of dirt right next to each other could sell for the same price, but they could have very different intrinsic values, whether it's related to water or soil or other conditions. And so we've been able to look at farmland where we think that we can add the most value to. We've been very successful at buying that land and generating good returns on it.
Well, let's talk about how this is going to scale. Adam put together a detailed recap of his visit to your largest property in Stockton, California, where you held your latest investor appreciation event. He was really impressed by both the quality of the property itself, as you're mentioning, you picked well, as well as the development plan the farmland team had for it. Okay, so how, if at all, will the property acquisition and management strategy for this new REIT differ from the former LP fund, and can you scale?
Good question. So One thing that people really aren't familiar, people aren't generally familiar with real estate in general as an asset class, and even less so with farmland. So there's about $2.4 trillion worth of farmland in the U.S. And if you look at the other forms of commercial real estate, office buildings, apartment buildings, shopping malls, those are actually all about the same size as the farmland market. And when you add them all up, including farmland, it's around $18 trillion worth of these commercial real assets in the U.S. And if you add up the value of the publicly traded U.S. companies, it's around $18.6 trillion. Hmm. Really almost the same size as commercial real estate. And yet people's awareness and people's attention is focused on basically fractional units of companies, which are much harder to diligence and have, to me, some management questions and concerns associated with them in general, as opposed to nice, tangible, real assets. And we generally are not fans of leverage. We can use some, but we generally like unleveraged farmland that generates nice cash flow and where we can increase that cash flow. And so out of this $2.4 trillion worth of farmland, even with $250 million for our REIT, it's really just a very small portion. It allows us to be very selective and really identify the properties that to us have the largest upside and are basically the most mispriced. And we're looking at properties that we want to own for 10, 20, 30, 50 years and more. And that's a pretty unique perspective as well. And we're just launching this fund. We already have one property under contract. We have three more that we're evaluating. And basically we can, we basically have over $50 million worth of farmland in our pipeline right now, and we're really just getting started. So we think that we'll be able to find, buy, and manage farmland very, very well. We're successfully managing our 7,000 acres right now, and we really have a great, now a nice track record, good management systems for being able to manage larger properties and scale up the fund quite nicely.
Excellent. So if someone invests in this new REIT, what should their expectations be as an investor? So I'm thinking about, they're in this for the duration, I guess. What kind of returns would they expect in the first few years and things like that? Because I know you have a quite a bit of build out and capital improvements and other things, considerations as you're converting what I guess is almost always non-organic into organic.
That's right. But the farmland that we buy generally is cash flowing when we buy it. Mm-hmm. And so we specialize in basically making sure that the cash flow continues as much as possible, even during the conversion period. So, and we've been actually even more successful with that in the larger properties that we've bought. So, investors basically, we don't view farmland as an asset class where you can flip. We don't think it's a good business model to buy farmland, lever it up, and count on selling it in 5 to 7 years at some big markup. We think that the value of farmland is capital appreciation long term, but it's primarily that increasing cash flow, increasing the cash flow from 3.5% to 6 to 8%, and even more, that then also continues to increase with inflation. So in terms of the on-the-ground management, where we're really adding value is really converting from those commodity crops where you have maybe one farmer growing one kind of crop on 2,000, 4,000, 6,000 acres at a time. And they're producing that one commodity crop because it's efficient for them. They've bought a large piece of large equipment, and they just want to use it. And that's how they get the best returns on their equipment. And for them, the farmland is basically free. They generally had it for 20, 50, 100 years or so. And, it may be operationally efficient for them to produce those commodity crops, but it's not the best way of generating returns from the asset. And we view farmland from how do we get the best returns from the asset itself, and that if my business partner has a PhD in biology. I have a degree in biochemistry. You know, we understand actually that to get the best productivity from farmland, the farmland actually wants to be rotated. It actually wants livestock on cropland. And it wants sheep and cattle and pastured poultry on that land. And it wants it in that pastured restorative phase for 3 to 7 years. That actually generates much more revenue than the commodity crops that would normally grow on that land. And it generates around $180 to $200 worth of soil fertility per year in that soil. And then after it's certified organic after 3 years, then we can rotate in organic vegetable farmers, and they generate great returns from their vegetables and also save a lot of money from not having to put in input costs, because we've had our livestock add that soil fertility over the past 3 to 7 years. Then after 2 to 3 years, those organic vegetable farmers rotate onto the next piece of pasture. We bring in a grain farmer or put it back in the pasture, and we're managing this rotation on an ongoing basis. And it really is a much better way of managing farmland. It generates more revenues, lower input costs. It's more profitable, even while it's creating more jobs per acre. And it does that in part by price premiums that people are willing to pay. But even if there were no price premiums, because the input costs are lower, the farmers would be more profitable and we would be more profitable.
You know, Craig, sometimes I've described this idea to people, and their question to me is, well, doesn't this just price farmers off the land? And I know from having talked with you in the past that your farmers apparently actually think this is a great deal and controls risk for them. Is that true?
It's very true. Actually, you know, today 40% of farmland is leased. So that's very true. You know, today 40% of farmland is leased in the U.S. And so the farmers actually know that they actually can make more money on leased land than they can on owned land. And in fact, we've really created some tremendous barriers for farmers with just the price of land as it is. If a farmer wants to double their business, they just have to spend a lot of money on land. We didn't create this problem. This problem has basically been there for a long time. And it's not unique to farmland. So if you think of any other asset class, think of office buildings. So we rent our office space. And when I want to grow my business, I just rent more office space. I don't buy an office building, and then when I want to double my staff, I have to buy a new office building and fill it up. But that's really what we forced farmers to do with basically kind of an old business model there. And it's even worse for the organic farmers. So the organic farmers, if they want to double the size of their business, they have to buy twice as much land. Then they have to spend 3 years converting that to certified organic farmland. And then that fourth year, they have to double their sales instantly in order to pay for all this land. It's really an absolutely huge capital barrier, and it's resulting in a big mismatch between the demand for organic food, which is growing at over 14% per year. It's 4.5% of the U.S. food budget. So it's 4.5% of the U.S. food budget is the demand for organic food, but the supply of organic farmland is only around 1% of the farmland. That's a big gap, and that's because of these capital barriers. And so what we're doing is we're helping convert more farmland to sustainably managed, certified organic farmland. We're taking the burden, that capital burden, off of the farmers and putting it on to people who actually benefit from the diversification, getting out of the stock market and putting their capital into real assets, and more importantly, by putting their capital into sustainably managed land. And we work very hard to align our interests with the farmers. So we do revenue sharing or profit sharing arrangements with the farmers so that, yes, when they do well, they're getting a larger total dollars, same basic percentage as they would otherwise. But when they have a bad year, they don't have to worry about going bankrupt. And our investors might take a little bit of a cash flow hit, but we also have 20 other farmers that we're working with. So one farmer or two farmers may have a bad year, but the investors in general aren't hurt, and the farmers who might otherwise be facing bankruptcy, they just basically have to set up again for the next year, but they didn't dig a deep hole for themselves as they would if they went into debt and bought this farmland. So this is really a better way of managing farmland. I don't think that 100% of farmland in the U.S. Should be done this way, but I certainly think that out of the $2.4 trillion worth of farmland, some portion of that, this is a really wonderful way of actually managing farmland and also making sure that it's sustainably managed for the long haul. You know, when farmers run into financial trouble, then they have to revert to more sure things. Maybe they have to add back in fertilizers or chemicals or pesticides or GMO seeds. And just in order to pay that bill, just in order to send their kids to college, we look at the farmland from a much longer term perspective. We use little or no leverage on the farmland. So that allows us to really take that longer term perspective, manage it for the long haul, use sustainable agriculture, basically use the soil biology to increase that soil fertility. And that creates really wonderful long-term benefits. It's a better way of managing farmland, generates greater financial returns, and really helps distribute everyone's risk. It reduces the farmer's risk, it reduces the investor's risk, and it creates a lot of benefits versus the system that we have now, which really looks like, you know, 53% of U.S. farmland is growing two commodity crops, corn and soy. That's what the current system that we have has produced, and we just think there's better ways.
Of course there are better ways, and I just couldn't be a bigger fan of doing it this way. And I've often said that we don't need any brand new technologies to be developed to really start doing a much better job of living within the realities as they exist. We have to just start doing the things that we already know can be done, and yours is a perfect example of that. It works, and I love the win-win-win aspect of this, that it's a great vehicle for investors. It gives them exposure to an asset class that's otherwise very difficult to get exposure to. And it's a long haul, decent return, cash flow positive kind of a business. It's great for the farmers who can then lease the land, not have to undergo the tremendous financial risk of converting farm to organic and doing all of that. And it's a win for the land where it's provably and demonstrably being improved over time. And that's something that you both track and measure, because that's your livelihood. So I love all of that. And so I'm sure other people are just as interested as I am. And we have a link provided at the bottom of this podcast that people can click and find out more. And but otherwise, people who are considering investing in this REIT, what do they need to know and what should they do?
The first thing is that while it's a private REIT, it is open just to accredited investors. Mm-hmm. So that the general standards are $1 million net worth or about $200,000 a year in income. And that's just those just requirements put on us by the SEC. But if they meet that criteria, then they're glad to approach us for information at farmlandlp.com. We're certainly recommend going to the link at the bottom of your guys' page. So we do have one property under contract and several more in the pipeline. So the fund is open, and we're glad to answer any questions. Well, and for investors who are not accredited, we do want this to be a publicly traded fund at some point. It's probably going to be 5 years out, but people who are accredited and investing early are really helping create what we think is a better way of managing and owning farmland, which is to have an investment fund dedicated to the sustainable management of farmland long haul that's publicly traded, that people can put their capital into, get the benefits of that kind of management, but also it's also a vote for the kind of society that we want in the future. There's a huge dominance of the chemical-dependent agriculture out there, and the main thing that we're demonstrating is that sustainable agriculture is more profitable than chemical-dependent agriculture. That's why we set this up as an investment fund. That's what our financial results are showing, and it just sustainability makes sense in the long haul, and you know what? This is the long haul.
Well, fantastic. And I love that point that the accredited investors who do support this fund are going to be the ones who are going to be supporting, ultimately bringing this concept out to a much wider audience, because publicly traded simply means that people don't have to be accredited at that point to participate. Liquidity is good. You can buy and sell in the open market, and all of that's just wonderful. So, Craig, thank you so much for your time today, and really best of luck in funding and managing and acquiring the properties that you want in this new REIT.
great talking to you as always, and really appreciate what you're doing with your audience in terms of educating them about not only the future that we're living into, but how the world is right now and what people can do about it.
Yeah, thanks for that, Craig, because I think the future has arrived. All right. Well, thank you so much. And I hope to get my own chance to tour the properties at some point.
We would love to have you anytime.